Apologies for being late. I had a bad link in the agenda and I just realized it was in Outlook. So, give me 1 second here, please. Okay. I have the agenda. I'm embarrassed. Okay. Welcome everybody. This is the December meeting of the Tucson Supplemental Retirement System Board of Trustees. I'm glad everybody's here. Pete, would you call the roll, please?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. We have Mr. Chairman Mark Rubin.
Here.
Aaron Williams.
Here.
Our HR director, Terry Train, said that she would be late. Jeff Whiting. Don't see him yet. Mr. Dave Samer.
Here.
And Jim Wasaki.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Okay. We have a quorum. And is Kevin here or going to be here?
Kevin told me that he would be here, but obviously I haven't seen him yet.
Okay. So I'm going to call the consent agenda in a moment. But what I'd like to do when Kevin joins us is we will take up recognizing the departing members at that point so that we don't keep Kevin in as much as he has more than adequately served us. And I don't want to deprive him of the rest of his day, but we will wait to do the recognitions until we see him. Okay. The first item on the agenda. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I just wanted to clarify for the record that Mr. Samer is officially appointed to the board seat, right? And Kevin has resigned.
That's correct. I believe that is the case, and we will introduce Dave shortly.
So yes, the formalities are all done.
Okay.
All right. The consent agenda is the first substantive item on the agenda. Do I hear a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I motion, Jim.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
And who was that?
Aaron Williams.
Okay. Thanks, Aaron. All right. Any discussion? Hearing none. Pete, would you call the vote, please?
Yes, sir. Mark Rubin.
Aye.
Aaron Williams.
Aye.
Terry Train is absent. Jeff Whiting is absent. Dave Samer.
Aye.
Jim Wasaki.
Aye.
Motion passes 4-0.
You're on mute, Mr. Chairman.
But Mark, you're on mute still.
Oh, I am. I'm sorry. Who said they were here?
So we have the same four members.
Okay. Is Kevin here?
He is not here yet.
Okay. Dave Samer, why don't you take a moment or three and introduce yourself, if you don't mind.
So just let me do this for the minutes. We're going to take out of order the introduction of Dave Samer as our new member. That was item E1, so we'll now pull it up and do it currently.
Very good. All right.
Good morning. My name is Dave Samer. I've been I'm a CPA in town. I work at RNA CPAs. I've been a CPA for a little over 30 years, working mainly in the tax area, with some involvement with trusts, estates, and investments. And I've been a resident of Tucson since 1989, so I'm looking forward to serving on the board and helping with the city.
Great. Welcome, Dave. Thank you. All right. The next item on the agenda is the investment performance review. Craig and Gordy, are you here?
Yep, y'all just have me today.
Okay.
No, Mr. Waitman.
Okay. Craig, the floor is yours. As noted, if Kevin does join us, and we'll find an appropriate moment to take a break for a few minutes and thank him for his service, as well as Jim. But take it away, Craig.
Can everybody see my screen now? Is that a nod yes that you can see?
Yep.
Okay, good. So we're talking about September 30th numbers. They're not really meaningful right now. We're sitting here at December 19th. The market's done a lot of things since that time, but we will take a look at September results in just a second. You know, needless to say, the good returns that we saw in Q3 have mostly persisted through Q4. The interest rate, the election we had at the beginning of November, markets skyrocketed. As a result of that, we saw decreases in the yield curve, both due to investor expectations as well as the Fed lowering rates. This past week has not been a great week for the markets. There was some concern about potential Fed action, what they might do moving forward. The Fed did lower rates for the third time this year, another quarter basis point yesterday at their meeting. So the Fed funds rate is now sitting between 4.25 and 4.5. What that means for you all is short-term cash is still earning a pretty good amount, less than the 5.5% that they had raised rates to in 2022. But one of the things that we've seen, subsequent to that time is we've seen longer-term rates go up. So when you're looking at bond portfolios, yields tend to be pretty good indicators of future returns. So given the fact that we had nearly 15 years of almost zero interest rates, the expectation for bonds is still a lot better. And I'll say rosier looking moving forward with rates at about 4.25 on the short end, about 4.5 on the longer end of the curve, than it had been for quite a long time. All that said, the Fed did announce yesterday, that there could be fewer rate hikes in 2025. The market didn't like that. I don't know if you all saw, but the market dropped about 1,000 points yesterday. I was looking at market open today. They recovered about 1% today, but the market's expectation is that rates are going to get back down to, I'll use the quote, normal levels, sometime in 2025, which I think people are kind of expecting more to be in that 2.5% range. The Fed is indicating it's probably not going to be getting there next year. That's certainly, that remains to be seen, but that's, very likely going to be a key driver of what we see next year. Things impacting rate decisions, GDP, you see here on that bottom chart on the right, that orange number, that was initial Q3 GDP at 2.8%. I saw something pop up this morning that they've revised that upwards to 3.1%. That's actually going in the opposite direction of truthfully what the Fed would want. We've seen inflation numbers ticking up relatively recently. So while investors are looking and hoping for those lower interest rates, the metrics, economic metrics, things like that GDP number, unemployment, inflation and things like that are not moving in the direction that the Fed would expect given a tightening of the economy, and really an ideal place to lower rates. I think I really talked through this, but some interesting charts on the shifting mindset of where the Fed thinks they're going to be. And keep in mind, this is a little bit old, but you could see here, in 2024, rates remaining a little bit higher. Then you see expectations for 2025 starting to come down, and then 2026 coming down even further. That's still consistent. But certainly the market is paying very close attention to the magnitude of that. I think this chart is interesting and worth pointing out because, at your last meeting, you all made the decision to hold your asset allocation steady. And when we look at where things sit currently, we'll talk about what that is in a little bit more detail. But, I think the point to take away from this is in most instances during cutting cycles, both stocks and bonds do pretty well. The stock market likes it because capital is easier and cheaper to borrow. You can redeploy it into other things, becomes more of a risk-on environment. Generally means, you know, there's better future expected growth and the like, which the stock market likes. And then you see there on the bond side, rates come down, bond prices go up. So you see that subsequent, you know, bump on the bond side in that lower right-hand chart. So, you know, all that said, I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what 2025 is going to bring necessarily. You know, but if the Fed maintains, you know, some pace of cutting, which still is the expectation, even if it might not be as much as people want, you know, you could expect generally good returns from both stocks and bonds. Taking, you know, I jokingly said this feels like, a, you know, 9:30 feels like a long time ago, but do want to, you know, put some of the results in context. You see there the highlighted column, everything was in positive territory for Q3. A couple of differences that we did see in Q3 that we really haven't seen to be particularly persistent in general. Small cap outperformed large cap. We did actually see value outperform growth in the U.S., which has been relatively unusual given the significant performance of the Mag 7. We also did see emerging markets outperform developed markets outside of the U.S. You see there on the fixed income side, the Bloomberg aggregate up 5.2% for the quarter. Again, that has to do with the direction of interest rates, rates generally going down. I will point out that 11.5% over the 1 year period. And the reason I'm kind of harping on bonds is because we saw some pretty tough numbers there in 2022. A sharp increase in rates led to pretty negative bond prices, very, very bad bond returns. It was an area that we discussed quite a bit at the October board retreat and whether or not it maybe made sense to increase the bond allocation here. You know, as I said, the decision was made to hold things steady given some of the potential uncertainty around future contributions. You know, but like I said, you know, a few minutes ago, the forward-looking expectation on bonds, it continues to be a lot better than we had seen for quite a number of years. I do want to point out here, taking a look at the NCREIF property index, you know, this is actually property level returns out in the market for the first quarter in a very, very long time. Positive results. You know, when we do look at the Odyssey, the NCREIF Odyssey results, which is what your portfolios are benchmarked to a little bit later, they don't look quite as good as this. But one of the things we did talk about during the board retreat as well is, you know, certainly the challenges with real estate. You know, you all did reaffirmed the decision, to continue investing in that asset class at that 12% target. And I'm not going to definitively say we've turned a corner and you're going to see positive results and appreciation, there, you know, continually every quarter moving forward. But it does appear that things are moving in the right direction, you know, really with the exception of office. A lot of sectors in real estate are seeing much better vacancy levels, pretty good income returns. And so, you know, I'll say fingers crossed that we've turned a direction there. I've got a lot more charts here. I did want to spend a couple minutes. This was, you know, what I was just referencing on the real estate side. You can see here, you know, vacancies in Q2, office is really the outlier here, not extreme vacancies in other sectors, which you like, you know, which you generally like to see. And then not net operating income by property type. You know, certainly looking at these, office has been that laggard there. You know, the challenges from retail, that seems to have reset a little bit, especially given the type of retail that a lot of the managers have pivoted their portfolios to. but, you know, pretty strong in net operating income growth there. So like I said, these are just some charts kind of confirming that real estate does appear to be moving in a more positive direction than we had seen for quite a while. So I'm going to pause there. I'm certainly happy to take any questions before I hit portfolio results for Q3. All right. This looks even smaller. Okay. So,
Craig, hang on one second. I have a question. Yep. Oh, I didn't realize I was on mute. I read a lot of stuff in the news about tariffs and how they're going to affect individual households and the economy broadly. Is there any analysis about tariffs as they relate to markets?
Yeah, I mean,
equity and bond markets.
Yeah, I mean, in general, they're not an overall positive. I mean, if you think about the dynamics of adding, you know, a tariff to something coming into the U.S., it instantly adds to the cost of that good or service. Most companies tend to pass that along to consumers. So in general, it makes things more expensive for people, which is not necessarily a positive for growth. You know, one of the things that I didn't mention was consumer spending has been really, really good. You know, despite people's feeling on the economy, people have continued to spend pretty robustly. If just everything becomes more expensive that's brought into the U.S., you know, it has the potential to create a pretty significant headwind for spending moving forward. You're on mute, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry. Does that take into account the fact that there's also a revenue? Our tariff guy likes to talk about the revenue source that the tariffs bring in, and that however we feel about tariffs, the fact is that money does come into the government when you have tariffs. So does that matter significantly, or is the negative is still there even though there's money coming in?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the timing of things, but I mean, consumers really drive the vast majority of spending. And so, you know, if they're potentially spending less, I mean, yes, the government, you know, spends, but they choose when and how they allocate their spending. So it's not necessarily a one-for-one trade-off.
Okay. All right. Thanks. Yep. Any other questions before Craig moves on?
Okay.
Go ahead.
So results at 9:30, you can see here just on the cusp of $1 billion. I don't know. I don't want to put Pete on the spot. When I chatted with him earlier this week, I should have said, hey, do you have an updated asset value? But my hunch is you're probably over $1 billion now, given how good the month of November was. But that's a pretty cool landmark to be hitting. You can see here asset allocation pretty much on target. You do remain underweight to real estate. That's through, I'll say, no active decision. It's a combination of the fact that your real estate managers, your JP Morgan funds, have been paying back money, as well as the fact that real estate has dramatically underperformed both public and public bonds and public equities. Everything else pretty much in line with targets. You can see there domestic equity, you know, we've talked about this a lot, has dramatically outperformed everything else. You know, so you are maintaining, you know, a relative overweight to there. You're still within policy targets. You know, so no concerns on that end. And I do, and Dave, this is, you know, maybe a little bit for me, more for you than, you know, a couple of the others who've been around, but looking at that target, you can see what the target allocations are to the respective asset classes. And as I said during my market comments in October, you all reaffirmed that you were going to be sticking at these targets moving forward. The one thing I do want to note is, you know, the decision as well that you made in October was, right now you have two real estate managers, one core, one a little bit more core plus value add. At the October meeting, you made the decision to move forward with two core real estate managers with the intent of splitting the assets at between them 50-50. I will note at this time, I think it's under my topics as well, but we are on pace to have manager presentations at your February meeting, which was the discussion in October. So we are on pace to have that happen. You know, as I said, you are slightly underweight to that real estate target. So our expectation would be, you know, in communications with whoever you all select down the road is approximately what their ultimate target is going to be, which is going to be that 12%. So probably about 55-ish million, give or take, to each of those managers down the road. We will work with them, you know, to provide them capital as money is paid back from both JP Morgan portfolios. So I guess any quick questions there?
Yeah, Craig, just a real quick, since we do have Mr. Samer on and this is his first meeting with us, could you give us in 30 seconds what we're doing in real estate and what the timeline looks like, just to remind everybody?
Yep. So let me, I'll visually show. Sorry, I can't remember what page this was on. Yeah. Okay. So your real estate managers are all of the red here. You know, like I said, real estate has been a challenge. We've seen property write-downs, which is leading to losses in those portfolios. So being red in and of itself has not really been the issue. But if you look at the relative performance for both of these portfolios, they're trailing their respective benchmarks pretty significantly over long periods of time. They've also both had some pretty significant team changes in terms of the folks running the portfolios. So the board has made the decision to fully exit both of these funds. And the way that they work is these managers call and return capital on specific schedules, generally quarterly. Because of the challenges that we've seen in the space, a lot of investors have put in to get their money back. And so these funds now have what are called queues. And so they're returning money much more slowly over time as they're getting, you know, potentially new entrants into the fund. But as they're repositioning the portfolio, as they're selling properties, they're paying down their queues. These funds, they're going to be handled a little bit differently. JP Morgan Income and Growth, the fund has put in for an 100% redemption. So they know that you want to take all of your money out. So as they have distributable funds, those get returned to you pro rata based on your ownership stake in the fund. The Strategic Property Fund is working a little bit differently. They have actually recently offered investors a fee savings program. So if you have less than 20% of your total investment in the fund, you get to take advantage of the fee savings program. And my mind just blanked on what that level is. I think it's a 25% discount on your fees. And so what you all have chosen to do is you have roughly 20% of your asset value in there. They continue to pay out distributions based on your full pro rata investment. So the intent is during the course of the fee program to take advantage of those fee savings and continually stay at, you know, kind of at the cusp of that 20%. But then over time, the intent is to take the full investment from the Strategic Property Fund. So at the October meeting, we did a structure review of real estate. So right now, you know, like I said, that Strategic Property Fund is what we call a core real estate fund. It's made up of the four property types. So office, retail, industrial, and multifamily housing. It's predominantly established properties, generally pretty leased up. There's not a whole lot of property development. There's not a lot of what we call alternative property types. So things like senior housing, cold storage, stuff like that. The JP Morgan Income and Growth Fund is a core plus slash value add fund. A portfolio like this, you expect potentially higher risk, but also higher returns over time. That's because they might develop properties from the ground up. They might buy underperforming properties with the intent of refurbishing them, updating them, and getting them back out on the market for a higher value. They might have, like I said, alternative property types. Maybe they're looking in smaller markets and the like. Then we also, at the October meeting, discussed things like opportunistic real estate, which is, I'll say, even more aggressive than what I just described. It has a much more complicated fund structure, a lockup of funds. Through the discussion, the decision was made to move forward with two core real estate managers. So really, continuing to have exposure to the asset class, which does act as a pretty good diversifier over time, but through the implementation of two core real estate managers. So internally here at Cowen, we're in the process of working with our real assets group to vet managers that are going to be not only complementary to each other, but complementary to the two JP Morgan funds, because we do expect those funds to continue to pay out over a relatively protracted period of time. Our expectation is to have candidates for the board to interview at its February meeting. So that was the intent, for you all to meet with managers at that February meeting.
Thank you, Pete. Let me, for Dave's benefit, just quickly, the issue, and we had JP Morgan visit us, I think, at least twice in person. I think it was three times. Very nice people. Their fundamental problem was they were way overweight in trophy office and retail properties, big city office buildings and metro area malls and shopping centers. And when a market like that turns, and it started turning long before COVID, they couldn't find their way out of it, and we finally essentially decided that it was time to try something else. So that's really the backstory with what Craig shared and my brief comments, I think. Does any of that prompt any questions?
No questions, but thank you. That was really helpful background information.
Yeah. And we wrestled in October with, real estate is obviously illiquid. These with the dollars that we invest, we're not doing any direct investing. This is not, buying and renting houses in South Tucson or, other communities and the like. So, it is very much an illiquid investment, and it's truly a hedge, against other things and at a relatively small share. All right. With no further questions or comments, Craig, you want to pick up where you were headed?
Sure. Since we're here, I'll go here. I would make a comment that relative, because in a couple minutes, we're going to take a look at, how you compare to other public funds. And just kind of as a matter of course, you all, relative to other public funds that we see out there, are marginally, very tiny bit, 2 or 3% overweight to fixed income, a little bit overweight to what we see on the median in terms of non-U.S. equity. So when we start looking at your rankings in a minute, I just want you to keep that in the back of your mind, because it does influence a little bit where you're ranking based on obviously on how markets have done. But I think, I always like to start on this line. The reports are a little bit backwards. We've got all the manager performance, and then we've got, hey, this is what it means for you on a total fund basis. So I always like to start here and say, you know, total fund last quarter, 5.3%. You know, just slightly under what you see for that policy index. And then, Dave, so you understand, the policy index is if you had been passively invested based on the benchmarks that you are using, this is what that is what your return would be. You know, quarter to quarter, sometimes even year over year, you know, year by year, you know, you don't outperform that. But the intent and the objective is to outperform that, those metrics, that passive metric over time. You'll see here on this page, and I will note these are the net of fee numbers. So these are minus the fees. So taking all fees out, over 10 years, you do see, adding about 15 basis points of outperformance. The story really over those, you know, 1, 3, and 5 year periods is you can see the real estate numbers on this page. You know, their relative performance has certainly played a headwind to that. I don't need to belabor that point at all. But I do also want to, you know, point out the, on the, really mostly on the non-US side, and then some of the challenges we've seen from Champlain, those manager headwinds have presented those relative challenges that we do see on, the total fund side. You know, I will note quickly, we did replace, Aberdeen with Acadian, and I'll talk about that in just a second. But that was really probably the biggest lagger we saw on the non-US side. You know, all that said, very strong absolute returns over the last year. You can see up 18.6%. And I would say very strong absolute returns over those 5 and 10 year periods as well. And really the intent of the portfolio, and what I want to remind you is this is intended to be much more of an all-weather portfolio to hopefully do well in a lot of different market conditions, because unfortunately we don't know what's going to happen in the world. We don't know what's going to happen in the economy. So the intent is to make it more of a steady eddy over time. And, you know, certainly noting that over those 5 and 10 year periods, you are outperforming your, you know, actuarial assumption, which is, you know, that 6.75%. And, you know, that's certainly a benefit. And the more, that the investment program, I'll say can pull its weight, in terms of that, the less pressure that you have, you know, on that contribution front as well. So taking, you know, a quick look at, some of the managers, you know, I never love to focus on the quarter. I know that's what we are here to review, but you know, you all are an open and ongoing pension plan. So I really do like to harp on the consistent results over time is really what we're looking for and hoping to achieve. Not specifically a quarter or a year or even sometimes 3 years. It's that consistency over time. You know, so certainly on the large cap equity side, you see here just slightly above that index, over the course of the quarter. I will, you know, comment quickly on that T. Rowe Price fund. You know, we've talked about them a little bit. Yes, they are a growth fund, but they have remained, relatively underweight to some of the Mag 7. So most specifically things like Apple and Tesla, we've seen phenomenal returns as a whole out of them. So not having, you know, quite as much exposure there has been headwind. It's really more where they are seeing opportunities in the market. And, you know, one of the things that active managers do is they don't necessarily follow things just because they're moving in a specific direction. If they're not seeing fundamentals, if they think there's other better opportunities elsewhere, they follow those, so they've continued to stick to their guns. But you see there, over the intermediate period, it's been a little bit challenged, a pretty good last year for them, though. You know, I did mention, you know, a couple minutes ago, the Champlain portfolio. This has really been a result, you know, entirely of stock selection. So these are, it's a bottom-up stock picker portfolio focused on quality equities. Quality has been somewhat out of favor as well. So we've certainly seen headwinds for them over that three-year period. A lot of this has to do with some of the selection, some of the names that they were holding during COVID not performing particularly well. So really that biggest bogey over the 3 years has been a couple of years ago. You see another challenging year over the course of this year, but I do want to focus you kind of on that 10-year result. You can see even with the challenges they've had in the intermediate term over 10 years, they've added nearly 1.5% above just the passive benchmark. And so it is something that we are keeping an eye on and we continue to talk about with you. But no team changes to note, no process changes to note. So they continue to do what they've been doing. It has just not been rewarded by the market. On the non-U.S. equity side, you know, as I mentioned, we replaced Aberdeen with Acadian. That money had been sitting in an index fund for kind of about a year. Acadian was recently brought on board. Really, both stock selection and country selection were headwinds for them in that recent period. It's always unfortunate when we add a manager and you see a full quarter and they underperform, especially by the margin that they do here. A lot of this had to do with selection effect that they had in China. It didn't work out for them. You know, as a reminder to the board, this is a quant strategy. So they use a model to pick the name. So they're not necessarily always quite as nimble when markets shift and move. China had been facing some serious headwinds. They had a pretty significant resurgence in Q3. They didn't keep up here, but we do still have confidence in them moving forward. American Century is another one that we've had out there for a little while. That space has presented some pretty significant challenges, really from a selection standpoint. You know, this fund, you see it underperforming both just the generic small cap index as well as a non-U.S. small cap growth index. It really has to do with the fact that this fund is growthier than that core benchmark, kind of not as growthy as the growth benchmark. So style's really been the most significant headwind there, but we're still, we still do believe in the manager. So no suggestions there at this time. And then on the fixed income side, I think just note, you do have some very active managers. That PIMCO fixed income portfolio has added, pretty significant value above and beyond the benchmark over time. We added Cap Group a couple of years ago to take some of the money out of the index fund, be a little bit more of a steady eddy. And we have seen that there from them adding about 30 basis points over that last year. So, unfortunately, we generally don't have everything firing in a positive direction, but overall, we think the portfolio has been positioned well and has been holding up well. The last thing I really wanted to touch on were those peer rankings. And this is the dynamic we were talking about earlier. So you can see here for that quarter, your fund returned 5.2%. The median return for public funds, about 4.87. So you see there ranked 27th or better. Than 73% of public funds out there. And again, the important thing to focus on is over time where the fund has remained very competitive, relative to peers. We do see in those, that kind of 3 year period where positioning was out of favor. So that above weight to fixed income and the above average weight to, non-US equity. Hurt the fund, but over time, doing very well, not only on an absolute basis, but relative to peers. So I feel like I've talked a lot. I'm going to pause, see if you all have any questions or if there's anything else you wanted me to go over.
Hearing no questions, thank you, Craig. We appreciate your efforts. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, I would encourage maybe some of the newer members, if you do have questions that you don't want to ask necessarily in, you know, in the meeting, you know, feel free to reach out either via Pete to me or, you know, to me directly. And we're certainly happy to answer questions or, you know, get some history, you know, outside of the meeting. So,
yeah. Thank you. And we'll try, because we have some new members, you know, in the coming months, to devote at least a few minutes of each presentation to, kind of bringing people up to speed as we did this morning. I think that's helpful. Okay. It looks like the next item on the agenda is saying, thank you to our departing members. Has Kevin joined us?
Oh, go ahead, Pete. He is not, but Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to do a brief recap of the update on the manager search that Craig mentioned. You. So he did mention it. So, but I'm just calling it out.
That's why I moved on. Go ahead.
Yep. So in February, we are expecting to bring back managers for review by the board.
Great. Okay. I urge everybody to do whatever you can to attend the February meeting, and obviously I'm speaking to the folks who are here today, 5 days, 6 days before Christmas. Those meetings are, especially worthwhile, because we really probably in those meetings learn more about a given sector of our portfolio than we do at any other given time. We get quarterly reviews from Carolyn and other discussion from time to time, but when we are interviewing managers, we really dive deep into a sector, and they're generally worthwhile meetings. There's certainly a fair amount of spin from the applicants and a lot of time that gets wasted, because that's how salespeople spend their time. Forgive me if anybody's in sales. I don't mean that to disparage. It's just a part of how that sector works. But we do pick up a lot of knowledge there. All right.
Mr. Chairman,
yeah.
If you don't mind really quickly, my understanding is that those presentations are going to be virtual. Is that the correct understanding?
That's the plan, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
We've done a fair amount of that now over the past few years. I think we've had four or five. Jim, probably our departing historian. I think we've done four or five.
Sounds right. Yes.
A couple of times we've done them, I think during retreats where we're in person, but we've done several and they seem to work just fine. So I don't see a reason to get people, to Tucson, although I'm sure some of them are disappointed that they can't come out here in February, particularly late in the month with the rodeo and the golf tournament and all the other fine features of our late February. The next item on the agenda is recognition of departing members. My understanding from Pete is that Art will likely be available at our January meeting to be recognized. He could not make today's meeting. I hope Kevin can come back. I'm going to say a couple of words about Kevin before we talk about Jim, who is here. Kevin wanted to leave for a while, and Art and particularly I did not get the job done as quickly as he wanted to. Kevin, I don't know how many years he's been on the board. Jim, do you recall? Was he here when you started?
Yeah, he was already here for a couple of years by the time I came on board.
And you've been on for 8 years?
That sounds right. Seven years, I think.
7 years. So Kevin is also a CPA with a background in corporate work. I believe he was the CFO at Tucson Electric Power for a while. And with no intent to demean anybody else on our board, he was our our wise voice. When Kevin spoke, generally, we heard Kevin, and then we were able to move on with a resolution. And others will step up going forward, but we will miss Kevin. He showed up virtually every meeting and didn't speak a lot, but when he spoke, we paid attention because he really had he had a lot of good judgment. Anybody else want to share anything about Kevin before we move on to Jim? Thank you. Jim, it's truly been a pleasure. You were the first board member to reach out to me when I got involved, and you're engaged. You pay attention to the details, and you bring a retired employee perspective that is valued and valuable, and you're a gentleman as well, and we will miss you. We very much appreciate your service. I know there's a parting gift coming. I don't think we have it today. There's, as you obviously know, we've had a staff change, and Pete, did you have any significant warning that that was coming?
No, I didn't have any significant warning.
That's what I thought. And in case it wasn't evident at the last meeting, I had zero warning that that was coming. And so it goes. No criticism intended. So I think, a little slow on things like getting a plaque and the like, but we will get those things taken care of. We have definitely had some turnover. Jorge had been with us for since I was here as well. And so we in the course of a couple of 3 months, we have lost three of our seven members, and that is that's history that will take some time to replace. But thank you again, Jim, for your service. Thank you for your good cheer with all of us, and thank you for representing the constituency that sent you here so well. We appreciate it. Well, any other comments for Jim? Jim, I should give you the opportunity. I couldn't give Kevin the opportunity, obviously, but you surely have the right to speak up. So speak.
Sure, I'll take advantage of the opportunity. It has been my pleasure to have worked with this board, and it certainly has been a learning experience for me, and very rewarding one. I just want to wish you all the best of luck. Actually, it's not luck. You're going to make your own luck by hard work. And once again, adios amigos.
Thank you.
So if I may, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Just real quick. Jim, thank you. It's been a pleasure working with you. It's been a pleasure having you on the board. And yes, we are sending some recognition your way in the works. We really value somebody who comes on and then comes back again for a second term. That kind of historical knowledge helps keep us on track and moving forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let me just speak for 30 seconds to the luck issue, because, we have been blessed for a lot of years with, a lot of success in no small part, measured by the fact that we have had terrific markets for a good long while, notwithstanding the fact, and I heard this stat the other day, I believe, Craig, 10 down days in a row. And you have to go back to, I think that's measured by the Dow 30, and I think you have to go back to 1974 since there have been 10 down days, which blew me away. I mean, that's 50 years of not having 10 down days in a row. Pretty incredible. But we should not ignore the fact that we're in the upper reaches of our peer group. And that's a reflection of the fact that we have had terrific guidance from Callan, from staff, and frankly, those of us who've been here for a bit and our predecessors having the wisdom to, as they sometimes say, lead, follow, or get out of the way. And I think we have done a very good job of staying out of the way. And that's more than luck. evidently a lot of our peer group have not had that level of wisdom and judgment because we're doing a lot better than they are in the same market that we all experience. So going forward, hopefully we can keep steering the ship out of the way. All right, enough pontificating. Pete, are you ready to put on the calendar for review and approval?
You bet.
Okay,
so,
take it away.
The next item is calendar for next year, and Craig asked if we were going to be in virtual meetings, so that is a decision for the board to make. As it stands, we are expecting to continue virtually, but that is, of course, subject to your approval. What we have right now is wherever we can get it, we hit the fourth Thursday of the month. I will share the meeting, the information that we sent out as part of the board packet. This just lists the times and dates that we're expecting. All I need is a motion to do it.
All right, let's hear a motion to approve the calendar. Let me ask somebody to make a motion to approve the calendar with all virtual meetings, but for the October meeting, which is a generally our retreat. Is there a motion to approve a virtual meeting every month, but for October and an October in-person retreat?
So I'm happy to make that motion. I would also, if there isn't any dissent, I would like to give Pete and his team the option to call an in-person meeting if they needed to, whether it be for future interviews or for training above and beyond that October meeting or any other unforeseen circumstance. But I certainly would like to maintain the status quo with the virtual option as our like default meeting venue.
Let me suggest, Pete, for you or Anastasio, that the motion reflect the fact that we will do monthly meetings per the calendar, default to virtual except for October, with the understanding that staff can suggest a change. Is that a motion that is good?
Excellent. Easy.
Okay. Is there a second?
Yeah, I'll second it as I go out the door and will not be here.
Okay, fair enough. Is there discussion, and I'm happy to entertain discussion about, we had a discussion last year about virtual or non-virtual. Obviously, for those of you who are relatively new and haven't gone through this, we started doing virtual meetings in 2020 because of COVID, and like so many settings in our society now, we have continued on. But that doesn't mean we have to. So if there's a contingent or a person who thinks we ought to see each other once a month, in person, 3D, speak up. Right. Let me add one other thing, and that is that we have gotten to a point in the last couple of two or three years where we generally are not meeting 12, months in the year. We are driven by what's on the calendar, and often absent a disability matter that is urgent, we will skip one of the summer months, either July or August, and we will often skip either November or December. So with that understanding, do we have any more discussion? All right. Pete, would you call the vote, please?
My pleasure. Aaron Williams.
Aye.
Terry Train.
Aye.
Jeff Whiting.
Aye.
Dave Samer.
Aye.
Jim Wysocki.
Aye.
And Mark Rubin.
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0.
Great. Thank you. And you'll write it up as we discussed it.
Yeah.
Okay. Next item on the agenda is the annual summary of actions report.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Each year, the board prepares a summary of actions. Excuse me. This is a very brief summary meant to go onto the board, commissions, and committees website so that the passerby who might be curious what does the TSRS board do will get some of the highlights of what we do. It's not meant to be comprehensive or complete, but it is meant to give a reasonable indication. So that was sent out under the agenda items. You should see it as item E3. And if there is any review or discussion, I'd be happy to share that and comment on it.
Is this something that requires a vote or it's done?
In the past, we have not required a vote, but okay. Absent any guidance, I default to let's do a vote on it. Because okay. I think it is good for the board to see it and acknowledge it.
All right. Do I hear a motion to approve the summary of actions?
I'll make that motion.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Is there any discussion? All right, Pete, would you call the vote, please?
Yes, sir. Aaron Williams.
Aye.
Terry Train.
Aye.
Jeff Whiting.
Aye.
Dave Samer.
Aye.
Jim Wysocki.
Aye.
Mark Rubin.
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0.
All right. The next item is the city code and TSRS board rule updates for disability. I want to put a bit of a frame on this for our newer members. We have spent, I would say the last, I'm guessing it's been a year, Cassie, if not more.
I think it was a year.
A year?
Yes.
The last year working on revising our disability rules, they were frankly not up for our times, and we have worked hard. Staff has worked hard. Cassie, our outside counsel, has worked hard, and she's going. I think. Well, Pete, it's your agenda item, so I'll let you take over. But I didn't want to indicate this is not something that happened, you know, in a meeting. This has been a long-term process, and
absolutely,
and a significant process. This is the area where we actually touch real people very directly, and probably the only way that we directly touch real people in tough times. The rest of it is a broad brush for our retirees and future retirees, but. When we hit this process, we've got a real person in front of us who's got a real problem. So take it away, Pete.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So that was a good introduction. This has been a topic for board discussion several times, board concern, and this is the latest version in an effort to get this wrapped up. I'm actually going to turn it over to Cassie for any questions that you guys have. And if you would like a walkthrough of the code changes, I'm sure Cassie can help us through that too.
Would you like me to share the revisions?
I'll go ahead and share that.
Yeah.
Thanks, Pete. And just for additional clarification, as the chair mentioned, we've been working on this for some time, so there's extensive redlining of this document. These are excerpts from the city code that deal specifically with the TSRS disability provisions. And the highlighting shows us the most recent changes I made following our discussion at the board retreat. The first provision that is on the screen right now is the actual definition of what is a total and permanent disability for TSRS purposes. And there are two clarifications here regarding someone who is approved for a total and permanent disability by the Social Security Administration. We are making a shift to take a Social Security determination as conclusive proof that the individual is totally and permanently disabled. So these are really just clarifications, but I did want to emphasize at the bottom of this paragraph that even if there is documentation of a Social Security determination, the board still needs to determine whether the disability occurred or worsened during employment of the city and set the effective date of the disability pension. Scroll here, please. This section 2239 is the actual rules for who is qualified to receive a disability pension and what is the application process. You could move down to the next highlighting feed. And, you know, at the retreat, we talked about the situations, which we've had to work on, where an individual's benefit terminates or is suspended. And the suspensions come up during the annual audit process. Pete and his staff annually reach out to anybody who's receiving a disability pension and ask for verification of their income. That's our first line of inquiry to see if somebody is back to work and potentially no longer disabled. We talked at the retreat about who should make the decisions about whether to suspend or terminate disability benefits. And we've gone back and forth a couple times between naming the administrator in that authority or the board. So you'll see here that we've gone back to a board standard that the retirement benefit will be terminated by the board for two potential reasons. Failure to comply with the annual audit requirements, which is that section referenced there for 39. Or if the board determines that the member is no longer totally permanently disabled. The third situation that we had built in is still there, but it's more automatic now. If an individual returns to work with the city because they're no longer disabled, this now states that the disability retirement benefit is automatically stopped. So we would need a specific board action when staff is notified that somebody is back to work. So now there's, you know, taking the burden off of staff for shutting down those benefits and those important decisions. And similarly, in 39E, we have put the decision making back to the board for suspending a disability if a member is failing to comply with the annual audit requirements. And in the context of the audit specifically, we talked at the retreat about how much income can someone earn and still be totally and permanently disabled. And the board wanted to put in an objective measurement for that wage question. So we have built in this highlighted language here that says if a member is earning over the Social Security's threshold for earned income as a disabled person, then they will be deemed to be earning too much to be totally permanently disabled. This ties back in both our new definition and in Social Security to the term of substantial gainful activity. And Social Security maintains a monthly dollar amount that someone can earn. And if they're below that threshold, they can be totally and permanently disabled. If they're above it, they're deemed to be engaged in substantial gainful activity and no longer totally and permanently disabled. Right now, that's approximately $1,550 per month, $1,550 per month, and that adjusts annually. So I think that this is specific to the audit process. This is not part of the criteria that would come into play in an initial application review. This would come up when someone is responding to the annual audit and showing that they've been earning it. At the bottom of this section, I made some revisions about when the benefit would terminate. And we have power above to suspend the benefits if somebody's not complying with the audit. This permanently, highlight here, says that if the member refuses to cooperate with an audit for a period of a year, then the benefit permanently ceases. And then that continuing language there, which is not new, but I'll highlight it, says that if the benefits are terminated, the board has the power to determine whether to recoup any of the disability benefits. And that would be a situation where, you know, let's say it took us a year to figure out that somebody should no longer be receiving a disability pension, but they were receiving payments during that time. The board would have the ability to look at that and say, okay, the disability portion of the pension was overpaid, and that's going to result in an adjustment to the benefit the individual received when they actually reach retirement age. And then going into the rules, these are, of course, are internal to the board. They're not part of city code. And I made one clarification here. We've had a lot of discussion about how the applications have been reviewed, because we want the board to first determine that an application is complete, and then if it's complete, look at the merits of the application. And in this section, I've clarified that both of those steps can happen at the same meeting if everything is in order. I also added a reference to consent agenda to respond to one of the members' comments at the retreat that, you know, if an application is clearly in order and everything has been submitted, that could go on consent. The board's decision that an application is complete could be a consent matter, and then the board can have its discussion with the member about the merits of the application. Yeah, that's it for the changes to the rules. The rules obviously will need to be accepted and approved formally, but I think it makes sense to focus on code changes at this point, because the code changes need to go to mayor and council, and then we can update our rules officially once the mayor and council approve the code changes. You may remember that we have some other code changes that the board has approved throughout the year, and if the board is comfortable with these disability code changes, we will be packaging all of the changes together into one ordinance to send to Maple County.
And we have approved the other code changes already, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And none of them have anything to do with disability in any way. So we don't need to look at those in context with what we've talked about in the last few minutes, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. All right. I just observed that, we or our successors at some point will likely end up looking at future changes as well. Those of us who've been going through this process for a while recognize that, for example, the change to address outside income is a function of an event that occurred in the last few months. And often laws and rules get written because of things that happen. So with the understanding that these changes likely don't permanently solve every issue that might come before the board, we clearly have come a long, long way. Do we have a motion to approve these code changes?
I so move, Jim.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Thank you. Do we have any discussion? Pete, would you call the vote, please?
As soon as I can get myself off mute. You bet. All right. Aaron Williams.
Aye.
Terry Train.
Aye.
Jeff Whiting.
Aye.
Dave Samer.
Aye.
Jim Wysocki.
Aye.
Mark Rubin.
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0.
Again, I want to thank in particular staff and Cassie, but the rest of the board as well, and those who are not among us as board members, for all of the effort. This truly was a a hard-fought battle. I think that's probably a fair way to put it. With and it wasn't so much that any of us really disagreed with one another in the main in any significant way. It was rather that this isn't easy stuff, and it's nice to put it to bed. So we will pass this on, and I don't think Pete or Cassie, we don't need a vote now to send everything to the mayor and council. These are items that have been approved and staff sends them on, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, great. So do that, and we'll take up the rules either in January or February. And Pete, on that, I think we can leave it to your judgment in terms of how those items get placed relative to the rest of our agenda so that we keep our meetings reasonably balanced in terms of time. All right, election progress.
All right, thank you. For everyone's update, the retiree seat is the election materials are not yet in the mail, but they are going in the mail. And we will be receiving those back in January, making the counts, and we'll get all that together for in time for our January meeting, I believe. For the vacant active member seat, that also is going through the mailing process and should also be done in time for that January meeting. So we expect to be able to have two new board members seated for January.
That will leave us with who presently, other than leaving Jim aside, who's been here more than a year? Other than me. Okay, Jeff, how long have you been here? Two?
Yeah, about two.
Okay. So we've had basically a complete board turnover but for the chair in 2 years. That's a lot of new people. All right. Thank you for that update, Pete. I don't see anything else on our agenda. For new members, board consideration is staff's effort to give us interesting things to read. A lot of it is interesting. It's hard not to look at the news and think that The Year of Living Dangerously is a very apt title for these times. I'll leave that alone beyond that observation. I better be quiet. All right. Are there anything else to bring to the good of the order? All right, Jim, we'll miss you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
And for everybody else, do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second. Sure.
Thank you. And Art, if he taught me one thing over 6 years, he taught me we do have to have a vote on a motion to adjourn. I don't know who that Robert guy was, and it's not my predecessor, but that other Robert guy, I think he was a little rule bound, but that's just me. Would you call the vote on the motion to adjourn, please?
Yes, sir. Aaron.
Aye.
Terry.
Aye.
Jeff.
Aye.
Dave.
Aye.
Jim.
Aye.
And Mark.
Aye. Thank you, everybody. Enjoy the holiday season. Take care. Be safe. And stay well.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thanks.